Welcome to episode 22 of the Judgmental Podcast, and I've got a very special guest today. I've got Commander Nightflyer. Hello, Elias. Nightflyer, how are you?
I'm good. A little tired, or sleepy still, but, you know, it is good.
So whereabouts?
Nice hour to wake up.
Whereabouts are you from in the States?
I am from the middle of the Midwest, Iowa to be exact. About 6 hours north of St. Louis, about 6 hours west of Chicago, if that gives you an idea.
Yeah, it does, yep. So Iowa, is that where Muse is?
Yeah.
Cool.
I could probably, like, when I could, like, when they ship me stuff from when I buy my minis, I get my stuff in like 2 days.
Yeah.
As one stop. It's pretty awesome.
Awesome. Okay. Cool. So just for those who are wondering, George and I, our schedules have changed at work, and we struggled to find time to make a podcast, which has been reason why we haven't done one for about 6 weeks or so. So really keen to get Nightflyer on. Hopefully we can make this a regular thing. I'll still record with George sometimes, but just the way it works. And I've also had Colin on the show before, but this is the idea. I could mix and match, and really looking forward to getting some episodes under our belt with Nightflyer. So today we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, which is going to be really cool. We're going to talk about Warfare Weekend, where Nightflyer attended as a player. I obviously wasn't there, so Jeff went to that one instead of me. So I was mad jealous, but that's going to be really cool. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Zim and Isabel, two new heroes we've released rules for. These are beta rules. Zim, if you're watching on Twitch, Zim, the illustration is on the background, which looks amazing. So talk about them. Fazil and Dorkhan models are out there. Everyone at Warfare Weekend was able to pick them up as part of the pre-release, and it goes out to all the pre-release people in about a week. So that's going to be pretty cool. We'll talk about those as well, about the sculpts. I'm assuming you've seen them, Nightflyer?
I've seen a little bit. I still haven't gotten a chance to rewatch the stream.
Right.
But
Have you seen the sculpts of Dorgakhan and Fazil?
I did.
Yeah.
Fazil looks amazing in person.
Yeah, cool.
I'm not sure where I'm going to hold him when I play him, but I figured I'll solve that problem after I get him.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Dorgakhan looks pretty neat in the flesh. I'm not a huge demon guy, but looks pretty interesting. I'll have to start messing around with him a little bit.
Yeah. He's good. One of those. He's a bit out there. He's a mixed one. We always try to do some left field stuff. And I thought, in actual physical form, I found him really cool. So they're both out. We'll talk about them as well as the rules and any experience we've had playing with them, which we've had a fair bit by now. Talk about some of our recent games that both Nightflyer and I have played. Obviously, he's played a lot last weekend, so we'll get to hear about that from Warfare Weekend. And then if we've got time, we're going to talk about just a couple of warbands we put together that we're going to just discuss through and talk about the current meta and what we think, which is really cool. I'm in the middle of putting an article together, which is all the statistics from Warfare Weekend. It'll have all the what heroes were picked, pick and ban stats, all that kind of thing. So looking forward to all that as well. So, right, let's kick on in. Warfare Weekend. I'll step back. Nightflyer, you can just tell me your initial thoughts on the weekend and how it all went for you.
All right, so some initial thoughts on the weekend. I loved where we were placed. So we were in the main hall. So that Friday morning, there were the last chance qualifier was up about a third of the room, and then the back half of the room, or the back quarter of the room, was the four machine scrambles. And we were stuck like right in the middle of that, which is great. So we were in it with everybody else, and we got two full rows of double tables, which we probably didn't need because it was 3v3s that day. But it was still like we got a lot of great visibility that way.
I saw the pics of the tables, and the 3v3 mats looked ridiculously small on them with people leaning over. Yeah.
Yeah, a standard 4x, like a standard 8 foot table will easily fit like the 3v3 size mat. We had two of those like side to side, and we were all like, I don't think we could actually move the tables. I don't think we're allowed to. So we just like had to make it work. But it was fine. I didn't really notice it in game. the one guy who has some back issues, we were able to set him up his own kind of special corner that he got to play all of his games on, which worked out really well for him.
That was Chuck, was it?
Yeah, he said he was able to go like the entire weekend, and his back like really wasn't really even bothering him that much, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Cool. So that was did you play the threes and the JNAC?
Yep, I played in both. Went 2-2 in both. I don't remember. I'm terrible with people's names, even their Discord names. So I'm not gonna try and go through each win and loss and all that stuff. Started off solid win. The 3v3s games were mostly defined on Barnastics, with Barnaskis being thoroughly below average, and Thorgar being absolutely dominating.
Okay.
Big thing with him, I was running the weekend, he was the guy I was focusing getting the monster kill on if there was an opportunity.
Yep.
And I prioritized Bloodsucker on him, which is a little bit different.
Wow, yeah. So combined with the regeneration, that must be really good. Yeah.
It's a lot of my test games I played, it turned out to be really strong. It really forces you to try and deal with him, and if you don't, he's gonna run the game. Then additionally in my list, which I'll give you my list, my 3v3 list was Thorgar, Rakir, Renaskus, Sharn, and then Svetlana.
Right.
And unlike most of my list, I actually had an ideal three for those games. That was Barney, Thorgar, and Svetlana. So the way that worked was Barney was kind of playing interference, and if he ignored him, he's going to get a chance to aim onto two people and light them both up.
Yep.
In a turn that's really good. And if you don't, deal with Thorgar, he's going to run the game. And if you're dealing with Barnaskis and Thorgar the entire game, Svetlana is going to win the game out of nowhere for me. So, and that's pretty much exactly what happened. If I got those three, I think I pretty much always won, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah, cool.
So the first game I won that pretty solid. He was a fairly new player, so I this was a tournament, so I didn't put the kiddie gloves on too much, and I beat him fairly soundly. Thorgar kind of dominated that game. The next game was dominated by my terrible dice. First roll of the game, Barnaskis into a Nashtooth. I rolled a single symbol in all blanks.
Oh,
I spent the re-roll. Same result.
Oh no!
That's and then, not good. Then the next two turns, Thorgar and Rakir sat there flailing against Gloom, which they couldn't kill.
Oh wow!
And then I lost 0-4 souls and 0-4 levels.
No levels.
I didn't even get a level. It was that bad. It was terrible. Then I played Chuck. We had a massively back and forth game. He had my effigy on 4 health, and he sat there for 2 turns shooting it with Alendir, trying to kill it. He ended up dead on the second turn, and then I was there on I had a chance a couple times, and we were both swapping souls left and right. So we were I had a chance to win it with Barney needing 7 without a reroll. He had a chance to win it with Alendir with 2 shots into my effigy.
Yep.
I killed his Dawn with 2 souls, and he got 2 souls back, and then eventually was able to kill my effigy. It was pretty nuts. Really back and forth, awesome game. And then after that I played one of the Milwaukee guys, I believe Gray, no, not Greg, Will. I played Will.
Yep.
And that one was the story of his Alendir was messing up Barney and Svetlana real bad, but she was able to get a soul on her, so she kept that, and then Thorgar ended the game with 3 souls on him.
Oh, wow.
He was able to just kind of... he was able to steal an Inferno early on, and then just go ham and into his army, just keeping this kind of bruiser in his way through. So Allendeer was lining up Barney, and Svetlana Thorgar was pummeling through his army, and eventually he was able to get onto his Allendeer, and it was kind of game over after that.
So with the warband, were you getting those three a lot? Because I probably, if I was going to ban against you, you had those three, you had Sean, and who was the fifth one again?
Rakir.
Yeah, see, if I was banning, I probably would have banned Sean, because it's the only defender in the list, or possibly Svetlana, but I'm assuming you got Thorgar, Svetlana, and Badaskus most times?
I think two of the four times I got them. Svetlana was banned at least twice.
Yeah, because people tend to look for
Sharn
either single.
I think Sharn was banned once.
Yeah.
I think one of my opponents banned Thorgar. I'm not 100% sure. I don't remember all my bans.
Yeah. So I think, looking at the warband, you kind of look for people that have singles of something, either a single soul gazer or a single aggressor or a single defender, and that's sometimes a good ban. But it can also lead you astray, because there's often, you just look at the map as well, because that can make a big difference. Like on a map with two soul pits on it, the soul gazers aren't quite as deadly because they can't sit in the same spot and keep getting souls. So yeah, it's interesting. I was just wondering whether, I don't think Barnaskis would have drawn many bans, obviously.
Nope, I don't think he got banned the entire weekend.
Yeah. That's what's good with basing. Like I've gone to tournaments basing my list around a thing like Lori Bella, and it's like secret tech. People don't really think about her that much as a ban target, but if you base your game plan around her, she could be amazing. So it's it's interesting. I was just wondering. Okay, that's cool. And then you had, is that three games? You had one more game to go? Was it four games, wasn't it?
It was four games. Yeah. So won the first one, lost the next two, and then brought it back up to two and two.
That's good. Yeah. And so did you, interesting, so when you were going to the JNAC, did you build on that five or did you pick a whole new seven?
I built a whole new set. So I wasn't able to get as many purchases in for the JNAC as I was hoping. So I kind of had to make do with what I had.
Yep.
Which means I was playing Allendeer instead of Astariel, which ended up being really good for the list anyway.
Yep.
The big thing I was missing was I didn't get to buy a replacement for Rakir. So with the release of Cobblestone, with the new Cobblestone, with that big piece of central rough terrain, I've been finding that Pathfinder's been really valuable.
Yeah.
Which actually brought me back into playing Barnaskis a lot in fives. Cool. So he's been pretty solid, and he was pretty solid in that. But I was hoping to pick up Nethany, which I wasn't quite able to get.
Right.
Or Fazeal, because he has that extra movement. He's also pretty bait light.
Yep.
So I was playing Rakir in that. So for the JNAC, my warband was Rakir, Thorgar, Allendeer, Barnaskis, Sharn, Thrommel, and Styx.
Nice. Yeah, that's interesting. I just want to, so I think I have to think about that again, because you've got pretty good coverage. Allendeer stands out as a bit of a target.
Yeah, he got banned most games, and that was kind of the obvious ban target for a lot of people, it seemed like, which kind of forced me into playing Rakir, which I wasn't super keen on, because a big part of the warband is it's if I didn't have Allendeer banned, I would usually drop Rakir, and then I had a really fate light aggressor / damage package with Thorgar, Allendeer, and Barnaskis, which left a lot of fate open for Sharn and Thrommel to start messing with people's day pretty hard. And then actually had Styx in there for a very specific purpose. If I was on a map with a central Vujasha, he could walk up, swap, and then walk back against a central Vujasha, which gives me the advantage of I now have a soul on the start of turn two while my opponent doesn't. So
that's brilliant. I mean, I think Styx is a bit like the Forgotten Man. When we played early play testing during the Kickstarters, Styx was pretty devastating. He's very high skill cap. I think he's got a very high ceiling. So I think new players can pick him up and then struggle with him and then not get back to him for a while. But it's interesting you took him. He just opens up so many vectors, and it makes your opponent very difficult to predict what the war, what the battlefield is going to look like. And I find with judgment, that's the big skill, is trying to predict what the battlefield is going to look like when you're going through your activation sequence. So it's good you took him. How did you get to use him much?
He was in a couple of warbands. Let's see. So I went 2-2 in the JNAC as well. I won the. I think I dropped in both the first. I think he was like either banned or dropped in both the first round for
Yep.
some reason. Or if I did take him, I don't remember. He didn't do anything of too much of note. Big thing that happened. Turn. Additionally, both those games were dominated by Thrommel. So the first game that I had. It was on one of the cobblestone maps with the offset random monsters,
Yep.
and I won the roll. I won the roll off, and on the first game, for Joshua popped up on one side, so I took that side.
Cool.
Which Thrawn was able to get the kill on Bujasha. Second turn, he soul gazed. Third turn, he walked the teleporter, teleported and dwarf tossed into Alendir, Lorabella, and
Wow.
Saiyan and Ashtooth.
Awesome.
So I got in like so I had Thrommel with a soul, and I had I think like Rakir or something with a soul, or no, it was Thorgar, because he I was able to push his Rakir into melee combat with Thorgar. And then with so additionally, on top of having those three, like Alendir, Lorabella, and Saiyan knocked down, Lorabella and Saiyan were in aiming range of Bernascus.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he left them both on one health,
Wow.
and Saiyan was on fire and he was out of fate. So, I was it. He
That was
tried to
it.
make a cheeky play where he had Saiyan try to have Saiyan finish off Bernascus because he was pretty low. He took a Rakir to the face. He wasn't quite able to do it, and then Sharn was able to punt Fujash, another Fujasha spawn. Sharn, who had taken like three rounds of Fujasha to the face, like three activations of Fujasha, popped Fujasha away and then charged Lorabella, needing a crit to win, and she got it because she
Wow.
was knocked down and poisoned and in combat with Rakir. Not that knocked down and poisoned stand like stacked or anything, but it was they were both on her. So
Brilliant. And I think it's a classic play with Sharn too. Like, she can soak up a lot of damage, and it's often worth her having a monster in her face, knowing that at some stage you can punt that monster 6 inches away into your enemy's back line. So yeah, she's very, it's a very strong tactic with Sharn. Just before we get too far into it, so there were 20 players in the end, I think, that played in the JNAC. And Shane York, Shane took it out. I'll
Yeah,
talk about his warband
Shane,
in a
Mr.
minute.
Warfare Weekend, he actually won both tournaments.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. Like, when Jeffrey told me that, because I was obviously just getting the results coming through, and when I saw that, I was like, wait, is that the same guy? And Jeff goes, yeah, like, it was really impressive that he did that. And it's, I mean, it was still early days with this kind of thing, and obviously the meta is going to grow huge over time, but it's a big, it's a good, it's nice to get one in early, because you don't know how hard these are going to be to win in the future. I'll just go through Shane's warband quickly, because I've got it in front of me. He had Dohnrakha, Sir Marcus, Svetlana, Krul, Thorgar, Zhonya, and Bastion. So the thing that stands out for me straight away with his warband is that he's got doubles of everything. So he's got two defenders, two soul gazers, two melee aggressors, and then one supporter in Bastion that just makes everything tie together. So it's a very difficult warband to band against, which I feel is important, obviously. Like, if you ban Bastion to try to take away his utility, he can then go with two great melee aggressors in Thorgar and Zhonya, an awesome Soulgazer in Krul or Svetlana, and have two defenders, which is legit. So yeah, it's interesting. I think the fact
It's
that
kind of like old school meta, 'cause
it
that
is.
was kind of a popular build like a ways back, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Like
and
earlier this year.
he's got none of the new characters. He's got no Jaeger, no Krul. Sorry, no Jaeger, no Sharn, no Fazeel. Didn't bring Victor because there's Dogger Khan. So It's a lot of it's wave one stuff too, like Sir Marcus, Don Rarkus, Fetlana, Cruel, Thorgot, and I think actually the whole warband, except for maybe Svetlana, is all wave one Kickstarter. Like,
Yeah, it's
so
wave. It's it was like Svetlana and Zhonya are both wave
they
two, weren't
too,
they?
the rest are all wave one, yeah, which is crazy, right? Like, it's a real old school, yeah, like two in your face melee aggressors, one's high fate, one's low fate. He's ticked all the boxes. Marcus and Dohnrakha are actually quite different. Dohnrakha's a big tanky, blocking a, you know, holding a shrine where Marcus has got the utility of knocking people down. It's really cool. I think it, when I saw it, it really struck me that he's done his homework and he's played safe. It's a pretty safe warband. Yeah, like it's, which, and he won the tournament. So it's, I mean, obviously the fifth game was a draft, and I'll have to get those warbands actually. I think I've got those in front of me. I'll have to find out what they are. The draft, we might do that next episode. We'll have a look at the draft together and then have a chat about that. But anyway, so I've just digressed off. But yeah, so any more comments about your games?
I actually did play Shane. I'm gonna chalk up my loss to the fact that it was a bad matchup. So one of the weaknesses of my JNAG list was it was no Soul Gazer, which I'm not usually a huge fan of. But it was no Soul Gazer on Cobblestone 3 with the Vajashas.
Right. Yeah, that's a
So
disadvantage. Yeah.
it was a disadvantage because he had double Soul Gazer. So I was able to ban his Cruel, but he still had Svetlana
Yeah.
to get the souls, which he still missed one, but I still couldn't I couldn't keep up, and I made a lot of mistakes that game too. I deployed a little poorly, and I was kind of sticks and sharing against about three quarters of his warband,
Right.
which
Okay.
was pretty bad. And then I let Marcus get his first activation into like, so I was going first, but he's I didn't activate Thorgar, who was knocked down at the feet of Marcus at like 14 health, and so Marcus just chopped him to pieces
Yeah.
pretty quick. Or well, it was like 12. It was like 10 health, I think.
Right.
Not no, it was 8. It was 8 health. 8
Right.
health knocked down in combat with Marcus.
Yeah,
So
okay.
Marcus just chopped him up and killed
Yeah.
him real quick, and he got like three or four souls in a single turn. It was pretty bad.
Wow, okay.
Oh no, it was three souls and Zhonya charged my effigy, needing a crit to get needing a crit to win.
And he got it. Okay.
Yeah, he got it, yeah. Because yeah,
Cool.
with Zhonya needing a single crit, it's not something that she struggles an awful lot to do.
No. Yeah. Okay, so that was game two or three.
That was game three. Game two, I won with three souls, killing the effigy with Sharn and Trommel.
Nice. So how
Yeah, it
did
was
Trommel
cool.
perform for you? Did you find him? Because did you play Shan? Because Shan's actually quite a good combination with Trommel because she can move him around the map, right?
I actually so the like that's kind of like it kind of looks like that's what synergy is. Synergy is actually they're both like kind of like bruiser style, bruiser style fate hungry bruisers. So though Sharn can charge someone, usually getting three or four damage, and then get the four true damage with the
Hammer smash, whatever it's called. Yep.
With Hammer Smash, and then Thrummel, of course, has the big swing on someone, and can set people up a little bit. So he performed pretty good the first two games. The second two games, he didn't perform as well for me.
Yeah, I'm a big Trommel fan, but I'm first to admit there are games where if he just gets in the wrong position at the wrong time, or it makes it pretty tough. But yeah, anyway, so that's cool. Okay, and then your last game. So you won your first two? No, did you win your
Yep,
first
I
two?
won my first two. I
Wow,
went
you're
2-0.
slipping. Yeah, then you met Shane, right? Okay.
And then I met Shane
Yeah.
with a disadvantage, and I played bad. So I lost that one, and then met up with Countries with Crunchy Coleslaw in round
Oh,
four.
yep.
I don't remember his actual name, but I remember it was Crunchy Coleslaw, and we had a real great game on like map six, I think. Which I don't think I've actually won a game on map six, but we
Right.
played map six. I tried a little too heavy for trying to get one or two of the far shrines, and I gave up a lot of souls that over there. Like Stick stole, like, so we set up Fazeal to charge the Dorg, but Stick stole it, and then Stix died to Fazeal and Charn and Thorgar.
Right,
Pretty, pretty bad. And then
okay.
the fate was only there for like a turn or two because it got contested, and then I lost ground on that side, and then Dorg came in and killed Barney, and it was pretty bad.
Cool. So you ended up 2-2, which is still good,
Yep.
and 4-4 for the two tournaments.
Yep.
Yeah.
Solidly confirming my spot as a middle tier player, which I am pretty okay with.
That's fantastic. And did you get many games? Like, I mean, the news I was hearing just on the social media and people posting, and it was that there was heaps of people picking up the game, and there was heaps of pickup games everywhere. And so, what was that
Oh yeah.
atmosphere like?
So the atmosphere was great, super positive. We were all chatting, and then the entire weekend. So like Friday morning, I think Jeff gave a demo to some guys who went out and immediately bought like half the game each. And then literally the entire weekend during both tournaments, they were camped up on like right behind us on the next row, just grinding games against each other, just like the entire weekend. It was amazing.
Yeah, we've had a massive response, massive uptick in new players, and we sold a
Yeah,
lot of models and stuff, which was great.
it
Yeah,
was
it's really good.
so cool to see. Like they ran out of starters on like the first like by like lunch on Friday, which was real sad, but also kind of cool. And they were still just selling models left and right from what I hear. The time I finally got my, 'cause I didn't get a ton of free play games in. I got one demo with my friend I was talking about earlier on Friday, and then Saturday I played a fives game against him, and then I went to dinner with my wife, and then Sunday I got a bunch of games in. So by the time I finally got my free monster for playing a bunch of games, the only thing that was left was Gloom, so I got a second Gloom to Josh, like I was wanting. But so Friday morning I played Jeff in on like because I was so I'm a morning person pretty bad. That's why I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to podcast with you. So Jeff and I were the first ones there Sunday morning, so we played about a quick half game of threes where I played Zim and Bale and Sarna on the threes game, which was fun. And then I played David or Mikey Kong in another game with I built like a fives list off of that, and he banned Bale and Sarna. So I played a game against him with Zim, which is pretty awesome. And then I played a game against Greg or Soulburner on the Discord on a 3v3 on swamps with kind of with that same list. And he didn't ban Bale and Sarna, and Bale and I think I had the unfortunate experience for him of playing he was played against Bale and Sarna for the first time, and that wasn't a great experience for him from what I understand.
It's interesting
He
because
kind
we've got a
of
lot of
did.
heroes with models. There's a good segue to our next segment, which is talking about Zim and Isabelle, but Bale and Sarna have kind of been forgotten because we spoiled their rules when Jeff and I were at Gen Con. So they're getting manufactured. They're the ones that are kind of come out next, actually. And then we've now spoiled the rules for Zim and Isabelle. This is all leading up to a campaign that we're going to be running. We're going to launch it after Adepticon next year, which is going to be a global campaign where people can submit results. It's basically undead versus elves in the future world. So we're going to be talking. That's why we're releasing Zim's an undead model. Bale and Sarna are goblins who are from the future as well. So we've got a couple of things happening, and I'm in the middle of writing a lot of the background story and stuff for what's going on. But Bale and Sarna, yeah, they're pretty cool, and I'm looking forward. We'll get back into them now because they're the next model they're going to get released. And I think they announced the other day, they're going to release possibly, I think it's a big con in January in Australia. So we might release them in January and try to get Zim and Isabelle out for Adepticon. That's the current plan.
That'll be awesome.
So our next thing Things. So Warfare Weekend was brilliant. I'm gonna definitely try and try to go next year. Maybe Jeff and I will both go.
That would be awesome. One other thing I do want to say about it, so for the Youngbloods, they had 16 people turn out for the Youngbloods tournament. And I think like a solid like three quarters of them were people who picked up the game that weekend.
I know.
It was insane to think. It was just insane.
I
So
mean,
many new faces.
it's so good. I mean, people are seeing the game for the first time now, but we've been doing this for about 4 years. So it's quite nice. We've had a solid base in the US for a while now. The last 9 months have been really good, but it's really nice to see getting some serious growth now. We're starting to sort of become a game that's out there, and it's up there with all the other big, established games. So it's really nice, especially for two guys from Australia, to have that happen. So we're pumped. Jeffrey might be coming to Adepticon now because we're in the situation. Like, we're a small company, so us flying out to cons is not always, it's not cheap. But we're at the stage now where he might be coming, so that we're just trying to work that out the next couple of days, next week. So, but I would definitely be there. And the tournaments for Adepticon, I think, are going to be, well, I've only booked 32 places for each one. So hopefully
Oh boy.
we might get them sold out, which would be fantastic. But we're running a similar thing, a 3 versus 3 in 1 day, and we've got a 5v5, which is a qualifier, and it's an auto qualifier for the JNAC final. So the winner of Adepticon 5v5 will get a seat. It's our well, it could be the it depends how big it is. If we get 32, it's actually four people because it'll be one for every eight people we get. So
That'd be awesome.
yeah, it'd be really cool. So the top four will get seats for the JNAC. Anyway, we'll see how we go. That's what's coming up next. So if your people are wondering about, we keep mentioning Discord. There's a Discord channel. There is, if you just go on our website, there's actually a link there, or on any on Facebook, anything. Just ask us, and we'll send you a link. We've got a couple hundred people on there now. There's always about 50 or 60 in the US daytime. There's always well over 50 people actively on it. So it's we had a lot of new people come in recently, and you can organize Vassal games. We've got a Vassal module that you can play, so that's got everything on there and everything's up to date. And I've also got another announcement. So the iOS app has been falling out of date, but I've actually got in contact with the developer, got through to me, and we're updating it. So it's going to be on the App Store very soon.
Oh,
So
like it was a new guy who the original developer got in
the
contact
original
with you?
guys got back to me.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It is, and this time I've got access to the code base as well. So hopefully I'll be able to do the, because updating the images for the app is pretty trivial. So we hopefully will have a bit more control on how quickly it comes out, which is fantastic news. So yeah, I only found that out today. So that's really
Oh,
good news.
that's so awesome to hear.
Yeah, it really is. Cool. All right. So we've got two heroes that we released. I did a stream while Jeff was in Warfare Weekend, and I released the rules for Zim Gigrak and Isabelle. For those who don't know, so Zim Gigrak is a undead lich. He's an ice mage. In the story, if you're into the background story of things, he's actually Zarin, who we've been talking about in our fluff for a while, is trying to become the first undead to walk on the immortal plane of Athian. And he obviously succeeds because that's what Zim is. So yeah, I'm almost finished the story around how that's happening, which is really good. Hopefully publish that soon. But anyway, so Zim's come out. He's been pretty good. I'll just hand over to Nightfly. What are your thoughts on the illustration?
Well, I only have so my biggest complaint about the illustration is the fact that he is a future model and he's not a robot. Other than that, he looks amazing. Like I'm not like a huge undead person. I'm a bigger fan of like the smooth, clean lines that you see in like Nethni and Bale and Sarna. But he looks pretty sweet, and I'm excited to start seeing more of him here and there.
So we've got the sculpt's about half done. I've got some early pictures of the sculpt that have been sent through. This is a new sculptor again, which is really exciting. He's now that we're on the map, we're getting a lot of people contacting us about being involved. So I get a lot of resumes and things from sculptors and illustrators, and so I get an opportunity to look through them and pick the ones that I think will really suit what we want to do. And this guy is really good so far, so we're really happy. So if it works out, hopefully he'll do some more for us. So that's exciting. The thing about Zim is our second undead model, because of course we brought out Fazil, and we're really happy with the way he looks. Even though he is 1,000 years old and he's in the future of the judgment timeline, he still is an undead lich, so we've kept true to being undead. And there's no real futuristic stuff on him, to be honest. He looks like this normal fantasy undead lich,
He's
which is nice.
very bad Santa looking.
He is.
Kind of the impression I get from
We'll go through his rules soon. So his rules are out. Now the other one we released was Isabel. And if where Fazil is undead and messy and all that kind of stuff, Isabel is really clean. She's a human female paladin. And she's a much more simple sculpt, I guess. Like the pose is not so dynamic, but it really captures the menace, I think, in her, which is and the fury. And so we've got rules for her as well. So what were your thoughts on Isabel, Nightflyer?
So when the illustration first came out, she looked like really static. When I saw the 3D render, like I was able to get a quick glimpse of the 3D render on Sunday. She just looks fantastic. Like very like she's gonna be an artist's dream to paint. Because she has like a lot of like details, like scroll work on like her armor and like lots of nice smooth lines and angles to really show off your painting skill with. Get some really clean blends in there. And on top of that, her rules are really dynamic. She's gonna be like I haven't looked into her 2 months because ever since I saw part of the rules for Zim, I was hooked really fast. He was definitely the one that caught my attention over the two, and that seems to be what the case is for most people. Most people seem to gravitate to one or the other. But she's like, I'm probably gonna look after like if I start getting bored with testing for Adepticon, I'm gonna start looking at her a lot more.
So she, they're actually quite different as well. Like she's a bruiser. Well, she is basically a bruiser. So she's an offense defense. She's got two level up trees like Skull Bone Storm, so she can go Retribution or Holy. Very similar if you play Dungeons and Dragons or any of those sort of games. It's similar if we stay true to that sort of paladin abilities, which is great. And Zim is like an opposite. He's like a glass cannon. Although he does have a bit of utility, he's not like a Istario or Alandir where you get exactly what's on the tin. He actually has some pretty sometimes subtle utility, and he also introduces a new condition. So let's talk about Zim first. You're more familiar with him. So he's an Ice Mage. He's the first model in the game to start with a Mage 8 base. And which becomes particularly potent when you combine it with his new condition he introduces, which is Frost. And Frost is an agility debuff, so he can actually get agility capped. So if what Frost does, I'll go through that first. Agility is capped at 3, movement's capped at 3, and basic attack damage is reduced by 1. It's a decent debuff. It's not quite as devastating as being knocked down. Obviously, has the agi has no effect on dwarves or Minotaurs, but it's pretty devastating for elves. And when you combine that with a base mage of 8, so if he gets that off or someone's got frost on them, he's basically effectively a mage 10 model without the ring of power. So what are your thoughts on frost? Have you had a chance to look at that much?
It's a really interesting condition because specifically because the way that like conditions stack. So like a lot of people kind of like thought that Frost would like be like something you look at the end. It's actually in the way according to the way that Jeff described it, it's like the way it's applied. So if you hit them with Frost first and then knock them down, they're like you can bring an elf all the way down to Agi one.
Yeah, you can.
But if you knock them down first, then frost especially has no effect on their agi.
That's right. It's already below three. Yeah.
It's already below three when it's applied. So you have to really keep track of when those are applied.
Yeah.
And then the minus one damage thing, and like, is also pretty. It seems to be one of those things that's like really oddly potent. Like you don't really think about it, but it's a really big deal. When Brock is all of a sudden a 1-2-4, and he can only glance for two, he starts looking a lot less dangerous.
Yeah.
Similar with like Nephany being a 0-1-3, which is kind of hilarious.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a massive debuff for some of the heroes. I mean, even things like Istariel, where she's capped at four. When the aggressor's then capped at three, it's pretty bad. Like it's interesting. It's taken us a while. We've had the other conditions in the game for a while, and we've tweaked the conditions. Like Curse has been tweaked and be made stronger, and now I feel it's a really good condition, a good debuff. And it's interesting. It took us a while to think about, is there room for another condition, and if it did, what would it do? And this was a good opportunity because it's the only, the way to debuff for high agi characters was knockdown, but that only, even then, like, it'll still take them to two for an elf, or three if it's sky. And so actually he's four because he's got his special ability. So we have a lot of things to get rid of armor, but it was nice to have something that did punish high agility but didn't punish low agility. And it does that rather well. It's also a debuff that affects everyone's movement except for dwarfs, which is quite cool as well. We didn't feel it's nice for them not to get in a lot of games, a lot of fantasy games I've played over the years, dwarfs naturally get punished because they have these cool racial traits but happen to be make them weaker in games. So, and conversely, the reason why I think most games have broken undead factions is because undead lend themselves to their racial traits just naturally become strong in a tabletop game. So it's nice to have a condition where a dwarf can kind of shrug it off somewhat. The minus one damage still hurts them, but other than that, it's pretty cool. So anyway, we've got that, and that, like all conditions, it can be shaken by a fate. So it's not a devastating debuff where like Jaeger's Retarius, where you can't really get rid of it. So you can, if you've got fate, get rid of it, but it's quite a nice condition that we've added. So he's got that, and he's obviously got ways to apply it. So I'll just go through some of the other things. He's undead, so he gets things like Leech One, which is really handy. In all the games I've played with him, it's quite nice to be able to heal two or three health a turn, which is cool. He's cursed, obviously, and he's got soulless, so he's got that funny soul mechanic where he can't hold souls. He's flammable, like Fazeal. His consumed soul, I've had a lot of questions about this. So all undead have the consumed soul active ability, but every undead, most undead will have a different version of it. So where Fazeal's is, he consumes a soul to heal five. Zim can either heal three or damage three through true damage to an enemy model. So that's how his is different to Fazeal's.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts at this point in time? Mage 8, is that... Yeah, well, he's got low health as well. He's got 14.
Yeah, he's... So one of the things that are really interesting about him is he really wants to play really, like, kind of close to the battle to really kind of get his max damage output because of his fate ability, which I'm assuming we'll get to in a little bit.
You can do it now if you want.
But, okay, yeah, so his fate ability is he spends a fate and he gets to do D3 plus 1 true damage to every model, to every enemy model within 4 inches. And, or is that what it is?
I think it's D3. Enemy model within
4, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he doesn't have to choose D. No, it is D3 plus 1 for 3 true damage. Yes. I've been playing that wrong. Okay. Yeah,
it's D3 plus 1 enemy models.
Yeah.
So you get between 2 and 4, obviously. And within 4 inches, and they suffer 3 true damage and the frost condition. Now he can choose if he rolls 2 and he's within 4, you know, 4 inches of 4 of them, he can choose which 2 get it. But obviously the beauty of that is it's only one fate, right? So if he's close, he can do that and then still unload 3 attacks on the enemy.
Yeah, and the biggest thing about that is actually it auto applies the frost condition.
Yeah.
which I think it's the first condition that can be like the first time a condition can be applied without rolling any dice
Yeah.
whatsoever.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Like with Thrommel and Allendeer, like you can spend the fate to deal to give them their condition and deal a little bit of damage, but it's always been predicated on damaging with their weapon first, which granted for both of them isn't particularly hard, but sometimes like if
Yeah.
Thrommel's trying to punch an elf and they're standing right next to him, it isn't the easiest thing to do in the world if
Yeah,
because
Thrommel and Allendeer are the closest. I mean, yeah. I mean, if they hurt someone at all, they can apply conditions for free. But this one, so we thought about this long and hard. So for people, so Zim's card is a 0.9, so it's not the final release. But we thought about this long and hard, and the precursor for this that makes it difficult is getting him in that position where he's 4 inches away from lots of people, and then obviously he needs to survive once he finishes his activation. So it is a real risk reward one, this one, because he's got another ability. I'll talk about it now because the combination's quite pertinent. So he's got switch one action active ability. He can switch places with a friendly target model within 6 inches. So Styx is one is switching with the enemy. This is switching with a friend. So if you've got like a tank amongst the enemy's warband in the middle of the warband, he can switch with that tank and go in that position and give them all the frost condition. But he's then in that position where he's in the middle of all that warband. So it's quite interesting. His other option is to walk into that place and then switch out with a Shan who goes in. So that's the better way to do it. But yeah, he's only movement four, so it's not easy to do that either.
So like he's only Agi 4 res 0 with 14 boxes.
Yep.
So he dies about as easy as Styx does, which everyone knows is Styx dies like all the time.
All the time. Yep. So
Every
I
time
think,
there's
yeah.
a rules debate, Styx dies.
That's right.
But besides that, so getting him to play that is gonna be a really weird spot. And that swap actually has a lot of interesting utility with it too.
Yeah. I mean, you can just tell now, us talking about it, how much he brings to the table. He is a high skill cap, this guy. Like you really have to. And of course, you could do none of this. I've played him just sitting back behind the lines and just zapping people, because at Maj 8, he's got a. So next thing, he's got a combat maneuver, which is two specials. You give frost, and also if a J's rolled, it's one extra true damage. So it's pretty nice. I've had him sitting behind the lines and just popping people away, applying frost from range, and then doing an extra damage here and there, which is quite nice. He doesn't, if you do that with him, he hasn't got the burst damage that you get from an Astarion or someone like that, but he's still pretty decent. So that's a combat maneuver. And then he's got a 1 in 8 ability, which is Frost Shroud, which is actually situational as hell, but in the right situation, it's pretty good. He's got plus 1 Agi and plus 1 Res versus RNG attacks. So yeah, people like Allendeer, Kogan, Styx, Lori Bella. Yeah, he's Agi 5 with a res. It's quite nice.
So like even without getting into his levels, one of the things that really stood out to me is he like more so than the other three ranged aggressors that we have in the game so far, is he seems like he's really gonna shine like in the early stages of the game. So because with the swap, what you can do is you can walk four, swap with someone to give them that like plus 4 inch movement like up the board starting position before they activate, and then he can walk up four as well and be in a spot where he was going where you'd kind of want to be anyway, because he's not really going to want, because with Maj 8 he doesn't really feel like you need to buy the Ring of Power with him, which is pretty nice. And it gives you the opportunity to put like your Soul Gazer in range to go Soul Gaze a soul that might pop up on first turn from a Vajasha, or get someone who wasn't in range to charge and attack a monster that little extra range to get back in there now. Those kind of things. And he's still in a spot where he would kind of want to be anyway. Additionally, he's got like his level 2 does increase his DPS a little bit, but not that much. and the ability to auto apply conditions with Ice Storm and his ranged abilities. I feel like he's really gonna be a character that you see the most shine out of him on turns like 1, 2, and 3 instead of turns like 4 and 5. Like you see a lot with like a Zaffin. Like once Zaffin gets to like level 2 and 3, he starts stacking the dice and ignoring things, and he can be a real scary threat. Or this guy, he's gonna be like, you have to really watch out. He's not gonna start taking over a game early on and run away with it,
That's a
which
really,
is.
really good point you make there. That's something I haven't really. He's an early game monster, but late game he might tail off a little bit when people have got more levels, more health, and those kind of things. So that's a really good point. So he's level 2. He touched on it. His Cone of Cold, zero action active ability. For people who are wondering, if you're new to the game, why would you do this? The reason is because you only do active abilities once per activation. So it basically can do this shot once. It's a Cone of Cold, and he can target two enemy models within 2 inches of the original target. So he can hit three models with this. He gets no negatives for hitting the extra models. They just have to be within 8 inch range. But he can do additional Frostbolt attacks against them, which is really cool. And these are normal basic attacks, so he can apply Frostbite on those ones as well. People have asked about Leech. I haven't got it in front of me, but I'm almost certain Leech can only be activated once per attack action. So even though he's doing this multiple times, it's still the same attack action. So he can only get one Leech heal one. But other than that, they're normal attacks that do all on hit abilities such as combat maneuvers and things like that. So Cone of Cold is pretty cool. And then level 3 is a really interesting ability that's going to be. This is the kind of thing that's going to create stories around the campfire at tournaments. Is you can tether, unholy tether. Target enemy model within 4 inches becomes tethered. The tethered model suffers 1 point of true damage for each damage suffered by this model. So it basically means, yeah, if you do this on a healthy Zim, he's on 14 health, and you tag someone on 8 health or 6 health, it makes him pretty much immune to your opponent attacking him because they're going to be killing their own model if they do. Also, a nasty trick can be to cast this and end your activation in combat with a monster who would then hit you as Zim, and then all that damage will automatically go on true damage to the enemy as well. So, a lot of cool things you can do here.
Yeah, another interesting little piece of tech that I've been seeing people talk about is him with Zyvera, because you can tether someone, and then she can go deal 5 true damage to them, taking it from Zim, which then does another 5 true damage to them,
And I
which
love
is a
how
little
they're both
gross.
like, she's a necromancer, he's a lich. That's really cool. Yeah, that's a really good tech there as well.
It's a bit situational and probably hard to pull off because of all the stuff that needs to be within 4 inches. But if you pull it off, it's just gonna end a game like super fast.
Like, I mean, so he wants to be within 4 inches, so he can do his Ice Storm, and then, if she's next and he survives, there's a lot of ifs, but you can do this. I think with this guy, the Zhonya's out. What do we call it? Geez, what's the magical artifact where you can be unhittable?
Oh, Astral Stasis.
Astral Stasis Potion. See, he could take that early, do all this stuff, be amongst it, and then you could use that. He can't be targeted next activation. And then if it's the end of the turn, you can do him first to get him out, or you can use something like a Styx to get him out, or you can use a Shan to get him out, or a level 3 Sky can teleport back with him. So there are a lot of things that can this, like I said, a lot of depth to this guy, a lot of depth. So it's gonna take a while for people to discover everything, I think.
For sure. Yeah, he's definitely one I'm super excited to start like really just digging into.
Exactly, and I think a lot of people have already been diving in because his rules have been released. They're already on the Vassal module, so you can.
Which reminds me, I need to download that,
Yeah,
so
you do.
need to get
So
that
you
real
can,
quick.
so yeah, you can try him out now, and amazing. So that's Zim. We're actually going pretty good for. We're filling up our hour pretty quickly. So before we run out of time, let's switch over to Isabel. We've gushed about Zim for long enough. So Zim will be out, and Isabel, we're aiming to have them pre-released at Adepticon next year. So it's not that far away, probably 4 months. Okay, so Isabel is a human paladin hybrid. She's got typical hybrid stats like movement 4, agility 4. She's got res 1. The thing that makes her sets her apart from almost every other non-aggressor in the game is she's Mel 7 base. So she's a bit more of a bruiser than pretty much anyone else we've done. To be fair, like Bynascus has got RNG 7, but this is the first Mel 7 one we've had.
You see RNG 7 and Mage 7 a lot, but you don't see Mel 7 very often on aggressors, that's for sure.
16 boxes, she's pretty healthy. 19 max, res 1, agi 4. She's decent. Her base stats are pretty good, actually. Now, she's a 0.5, so she hasn't been quite as tested as much as Zim. We still released her. She's pretty close. I think there could be some tweaks coming with her, but we'll just go through some of the things. Anything you want to talk about first, Nightfly? Don't mean to carry on.
So one of the things that does stand out and to a lot of people is she definitely has one tree that's going to be more focused than the other, and from what I hear, that's intended. Her smite combat maneuver is pretty cool. It gives her almost like a nearly aggressor stat line.
Extra tree damage for 1J.
Exactly. Which is pretty interesting.
Now, if you combine that with Curse Bane, so the model inflicts one plus one damage any time it damages any model that can apply the curse condition. So now, just to clarify, it's not people suffering the curse condition. It's models who can apply it. So that's a Haxar, that's a Krul, that's a Nephany, that's a Styx, that's a Fazeal. So she's getting extra damage against them basically every time she hits them, which is pretty scary. So when you combine that with, if she gets smite off at the same time, then obviously she's doing plus two damage. It's pretty hefty damage, and she is aggressive style at that point in time for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty. It, she's pretty. She seems pretty legit.
Now, you mentioned the two level ups, and we did do this. So there's two things you could try to do, and we tried to do it with Skull, and we kind of didn't do it that well. Now it's probably a bit more even. We've had to tweak him a couple of times. What I'm talking about is trying to get the two trees equal in choice. I think people still take Mystic more for Skull, but his warrior head has improved, and I personally believe they are both pretty equally legitimate now. Now with Isabel, we've done Holy's kind of the default tree that people are going to take, but we feel against the right warbands, Retribution's going to be the better tree. So before we get to those, just is there anything else at level one? Yeah, there is. Obviously, there's Curse Shield. She can't be cursed, which is quite good actually, because when you think about the models that can curse and steal a shrine off you, not being able to be cursed is quite nice, particularly for such a tanky character. And she's got Lay on Hands, where she can heal a friendly model within four for three health. Now, this is one of the new mechanics we're introducing. This thing automatically gets better as she gains levels. So it's three plus one for each level she's gained. So at level three, she's healing five health for one action.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That's it doesn't cost fate. Yeah, no, it's no fate. So.
So it means it's three health for at level one, which is okay, but five health for an action is really nice. So this new mechanic is something we're going to be doing more and more, where abilities that naturally get better as the model gains health, gains levels, and then her level one fate ability is an action and a fate. She removes all conditions for every friendly model within 4 inches, which is quite cool. By the way, Lay on Hand, she can't heal undead. She's got a bit of a theme where she doesn't really symbolize, synergize with undead models, which is pretty thematic. What do you think, level one? Looks pretty good.
So level one, she has one of the better heals in the game, and level three is going to have the best heal in the game. Curse Shield means you can put her on a shrine early. It's one of the nice things about it's one of the interesting things about level one is you kind of have to like, okay, I want to contest the shrine, but I don't want to do it too early in case I get like pushed or knocked off or cursed, either pushed or cursed on the shrine, and I end up losing it. My model is supposed to be contesting the shrine. She can't be cursed, And with AG4 behind a shrine, she's going to be pretty hard to push off of that shrine. So you can activate her as like a safe, easy activation early on in the turn, without like sacrificing an a without sacrificing like early setup on a monster and some of those like interplays you have on early turns, especially on you see on like Scorched Earth a lot. And then Mass Restoration is sounds just being able to spend a fate, just clear all the conditions off everyone in 4 inches just seems really strong.
It does. I mean, so
So like
it's going to be. So this is kind of situational, but in the right situation. So this is obviously a direct counter to a level 3 Thrommel, where he knocks down 3 models at the same time, to an Allen Deer who can set through, multiple models on fire. I think again, and now Zim, where he can do. In fact, she's good. I mean, these two are brought out for a reason together. They're pretty much enemies, but you can see where. She can also counter his fate ability, where she can get rid of multiple curses, multiple frosts. But there'll be some games where an action and a fate to get rid of one condition is probably not worth it. I mean, Bastion can do that for an action, get rid of one condition on a friend. So it's not as good as Bastion's, but in some circumstances, it's much better because you can spend a fate and do it multiple times. So, yeah, I
And
think
it's
it's.
all conditions, but I think is the first time you can like it's like I got like Barney who can knock down and set someone on fire. She can spend an action and fate and just get rid of both,
Both,
which is
yes.
something that you've always had to like kind of pick and choose
Which one? Yes.
which one you want to try and get rid of.
Yeah.
She just like one fate, one action,
Yeah.
no worries.
So she's a direct counter to a few things. She actually counters Thrommel a lot because Thrommel normally charges in, stuns someone, and then hammer times and knocks them down, and that really screws that model up. She can get rid of both, stand them up, and then she can heal them for good measure. So it's pretty good. Yeah, I think she's got good utility. Right, so we've got the two trees. Let's go talk about those, Nightflyer. So we've got level 2 Holy, the Holy Tree. She gets innate ability, Divine Intervention. The first time any friendly non-hero, non-undead hero model within 4 inches is reduced to 0 health each turn. Instead of dying, it immediately heals 1 health. This is Brock's level 2 ability. Basically, she can apply it to anyone around her. Now, it is strong. It is a strong ability. It's The thing is, there's going to be someone within 4. You have got the option of dragging that model away from 4 inches before you kill them. You can push her out of, is so there are a lot of counters for this, but in the right circumstances, it's going to be pretty good ability, and it's innate. And innate abilities are always fun. What are your thoughts on that one?
It's once she gets to level 2, you're really gonna have to start to you're she's gonna be the focus of the battle. Like if
Yeah.
you can control her, move her away, pull people away from her, they're gonna it's something you just have to do, because anyone who's faced a lot of Brock knows that he is not someone that's easy to deal with.
Yep. At level 2, yep.
And applying that to like a whole bunch of minotaurs or dwarves is all of a sudden going to be like, oh, or even defenders, because she can do it to, she can have that be on defenders too.
Yep.
All of a sudden, like just trying to kill someone becomes a lot more of a burden than it otherwise would. Fire does counter it, I believe,
It
because
does.
it's
It's a heal. Yep.
so she if she's already activated and moved up, you can use like an Allen Deer to set everyone on fire first, and then just counter it that way. Or like use Thorgar, like if even if you're like already in range, use Mancatcher to pull them just outside of the four if they're just barely in it,
That's right. Yeah,
stuff
there
like
are
that.
ways to move them out. You could use switch, sticks to switch them out, or just pull them out, or you mentioned Thorgar. Yeah, so there are ways to
Lore
push them
Belt's
around.
another great one because
Yeah.
of she has to be now she has to be within two if she wants to keep them in, otherwise
Yeah.
Lore Belt can just explosive dwarven nail everyone away,
100%. So there's, yeah.
including her as well, because so she can actually get like three. Lore Belt is going to be really good into Isabelle comps.
Yeah, she will. I agree. 100%. By the way, one thing, before we go any further, people have already asked this. So because she's immune to the curse condition, so she can get Dorga Khan's, the monster's blade, the demon blade, and not suffer the negative. So she gets.
Oh, that is so good. That is so good.
So listen to this, the Night Fury, Night Flyer. She's going to be +3 damage against models that can do curse, because she gets one for the sword, one for the fact they do curse bane, and the other one if she does a smite. So
Don't mind me, I'm just gonna crit you for seven. Bam! I love it.
she's
I'm
going to be
so
two shotting
close.
sticks from brand new health.
Oh, I love it so much.
And the thing is, right? So she can do that. That's a Dorgon monster. She can steal that blade. I mean, so even Victor applies curse. So Victor's got 12 health. Yeah, she's. Anyway, that's something just an aside for people who are. She's
Yeah,
going to be awesome.
she doesn't do that to Zim because he does not apply curse. He has his own
Correct.
that he applies. So even though he is cursed, he does not apply curse, therefore she does not get the +1 damage.
That's
Not that
correct.
she needs it, he's only 14 health.
That's right.
But she doesn't get it.
And okay, so level 3 on the Holy Tree, Aura of Light. Whenever a friendly non-undead model starts their activation within 4 inches of this model, they can immediately remove one condition they currently suffer and then heal for 2 health up to their maximum. Now, the thing that this currently does is it counts for herself. So she's basically a level 3, she's basically healing for 2 every time she activates and removing a condition off herself, or she can do it for someone else around her. It is pretty strong.
It's very Saiyan-esque, actually. I see a lot of similarities between her and Saiyan with that, which is really interesting to see.
And the fluff story I'm writing is Saiyan and her are together. It's really interesting because they're from the same Holy Order.
Oh, really? That's cool.
So that story is coming out of I've been writing it for a while. I'm trying to finish it, but it's an epic. It's the next version. I think I wrote one recently where Bastion was talking about trying to stop Zaren. And this is the second part of that where they confront Zaren. It's really good. It's just before Zaren actually dies as a mortal. So anyway, I digress. Right, Retribution. You want to talk about the Retribution one? So we've
Yeah, so
got.
that's the one that I actually have any actual experience against, because that's the one that Wing Kong was able to he chose when he leveled up leveled her up when she finally got the kill on Sharn. She had been like in combat with Sharn for like 3 straight turns and finally killed her. So he went with Retribution because I had a Zim that was really close, and he on like not a whole lot of health, so he activated her to with the level two with the with her level two Retribution and did the Holy Blast, which is pretty cool. And then, oh yeah, the Holy Blast, and then first active, and then I went and then first activated her again and killed Zim with it. So he got him to pull it off twice on him.
So Holy Blast is one action, active ability. Target enemy summoned, undead, summon model, undead hero, or monster within 4 inches suffers D6. You can upgrade it to it. This is another new mechanic where we're starting to introduce where you can upgrade. So for an action and a fate, you add a fate to it instead of one. So you then do D6 +3 true damage instead of D6 damage. So this is just summon models, undead heroes, or monsters. So it's very situational, but if you're playing against an undead heavy warband, this ability is pretty cool. And the other thing, all her holy tree, if you remember, it doesn't work for undead models. So she doesn't play nice with undead models, right? But this holy blast is quite cool. Like if Victor's summoning a Dorgkhan with her on the table and she takes this tree, she's going to be doing a lot of damage to that Dorgkhan. Which is nice. Situational, but in the right situation, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, like if you see a Victor and like a Fazil or a Zim or like maybe even a Cradle across the across the way, you might want to consider you might want to consider leveling her in Retribution instead of
I
the
mean,
other way around.
every map has monsters, right? So it's not as if it's going to be useless. And if you've got a warband that can't deal with monsters that well, this ability, she's unreal at that because she can do D6 for an action or D6 +3 true damage for an action and a fate. So, and if you're doing it against a monster, you're normally going to get the fate back straight away. So, I mean, if there's a Dorgkhan monster on there, you'd take this to get her the sword. She could go there, blow up the door, can't get the sword, and then she's going to go nuts. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, like when you spend an action and evade on it, it's just about as like it averages out the same amount of damage that a Rakir's toxin roll would do, which is pretty cool to think about.
It's unreal. So, and then we've got Thunderous Strike, one fate active ability. Enemy models within 4 inches suffer D3 true damage and must roll equal to or less than their current agi on a D6, or they'll suffer the knockdown condition. Roll damage separately for each model. So this is another one that can be.
Nope,
Is that
sorry.
you?
I need to wake up and start getting ready for work alarm.
Okay,
But you can keep going.
we're
I
almost
just
ready.
reset like three times. We're good.
Okay. All right, cool. So D3 2 damage. So this is nice. She can do multiple damage D3 to multiple models, and so basically, except for Sky, I mean, elves have to roll a 6 to get knocked down, so she's not that great against elves into this with this one. But knocking down humans on a 4, on a 5 plus, and dwarves and minotaurs on a 4 plus, she can do multiple knockdowns and give them D3 true damage. It's pretty decent, and it's for a fate, so it's not an action. She can still do three other things. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's really good into those to kind of the monster mosh pit type lists you're starting to see pop up here and there, where you see like a Minotaur or two and a couple of your Agi-3 aggressors and maybe a not high Agi support or a hybrid. She can jump in and deal a whole bunch of true damage, and a decent amount of knockdown. To a whole bunch to those style lists,
I mean,
which is
I don't know
unfortunate.
whether, looking at it now and reading through them, I actually don't know. I mean, Holy still looks like the default tree, but Retribution has a lot of good applications. There's a lot of warbands where Retribution is going to be better, I think. I think it's got potential. I mean, this is what we wanted, right? So, and at the end of the day, she's scary.
So what I'm seeing here with the two trees is if you're just throwing her into a list, Retribution is probably going to see a lot of positives, but her holy side is going to be the one that you're going to be building around. Because it's the one, her level two is going to be amazing with a whole bunch of really tanky people. Like throw her in there with like a Thorgar and not Fazeel because you can't do it with undead, but like a Thorgar. And like maybe even like a Zhonya, and maybe a defender or like a Haxa or something like that could do a lot of damage and is pretty hard to tank down. And then could give them that extra ability on top of that. It's going to make it like they have to deal with this before like just like or they're going to not be able to kill anything. They're going to have to deal with it. And but like if you see or but if like if you're in a position where you see a warband that you like is going to be able to maybe even chew through that and they have like a Fazeel and like a Victor or like a Svetlana who's going to be pushing monsters into your face, like going that retribution tree might be that ace in the hole you have ready to pull out it if you need to.
I mean, I think, and the thing is, I mean, obviously played. I've played a lot of games in the warm up with her, like the play testing. She's killable. If she's got all these things going on, you can't just target her and blow her up with a Zhonya or a Rakia. Or, I mean, she's Agi 4, Res 1, decent stats, but 16 health. So, I mean, the games. I mean, we've played her on stream. Jeff used her. I killed her. He went too deep into my back line. So, like a Brock, really, I used Brock with the Vorpal Blade, and he was just doing a lot of damage to us. So, it's interesting. I think she's great. I think they're both great. I think where the game's matured to a place where the core rules are very rock solid, and we've got the ability to really push the boundaries with different heroes and have a lot of fun now. So, I think both these two are good. And like Bale and Sana are the same. Like they introduce so many new things. So it's really cool. It's interesting with all this new stuff. Like, you look at the last few heroes, right? So, like Jaeger, very different. Shan, Fazeel, Bale and Sana, these two. And then Shane goes and wins the Jaynak with five wave one models. And
Mm-hmm.
I think our balance has been maintained pretty well. There might be some tweaks for Isabel. She's 0.5, but what the hell's going on here? Sorry, I've got Siri talking to me. All right, cool. So, any other closing comments, Nightflyer?
No, it's just it's gonna be. I'm excited to start testing some stuff, get some games in with Zim on the Vassal mod, and checking out Isabel when I get a chance,
Yeah,
getting some
cool.
more reps in with Bale and Sarna, trying to make sure I have them down pretty solidly. They're gonna be a model. It's gonna take a long time to get the hang of.
And I think we might do from this point forward, when I get Nightflyer on, hopefully next week, we might start chatting about his Adepticon warband, and we'll keep track of that over the months and see how it changes and adapts. And yeah, we'll get his thoughts as we're going, as long unless he wants to do some secret tech. So
Nah, I ain't about secret tech. No fun.
awesome. All right, well, thanks very much for we had some people watching live, which was great. Thank you for joining us. Obviously you can get this on Audio Boom and all the I think it's on iTunes and that kind of stuff. So this is a podcast that we do live stream, but it essentially is a podcast, an audio podcast. So I'll get that up tonight, hopefully. A very, very big thanks to Nightflyer for being on the show. Hopefully we can do this regularly and get some regular shows out, because I want to keep it regular. It's just been difficult with George, but I'll get back to doing one with George when I can. But thank you very much, Elias, for being on.
Of course.
Yep, and look forward to seeing you on Discord and chatting to you, and then we'll hopefully do one of these very soon. If not, we can try to do it next week. So thanks everybody for listening. And yeah, if you like the podcast, let us know. Follow us, follow the podcast, get on our Discord channel and get into the game. It's great fun and it's going places and everyone's having a ball. So thank you again, Nightflyer. Have a good day at work. I'll have a good sleep. And we'll speak to you all soon.
Yeah. I'll yeah. Thanks, guns.
All right,
Have a good one.
cheers. Thanks everybody. Bye-bye.